ever find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Now tuned into the greatest.
We are back with another Wicked Chops podcast. Old G Smith is with the kids. Can't make this one, which is unfortunate because he actually is a fan and a watcher of Breaking Bad, which is what this podcast is about. Joining me, I think for the first time, Jay, is this the first time?
Yes, this is the first time.
Jay Greenspan. You might know him as published author, Jay Greenspan. Old Full Tilter, too, correct?
Yeah, I ran the Academy for a few years, lived out in Vegas. Yeah, was involved in Full Tilt for a long time.
How'd that go?
It didn't end so good. Didn't end so good. I don't know if you heard about that.
No. Fill me in. This is breaking news to me. But yeah, Jay, first time on the podcast. We've been friends for a long time, and while I don't know if our interests in entertainment always align, it seems like it's definitely aligning on Breaking Bad.
So absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So yesterday I got a text from you to the effect of, "Is this the best season of a TV show ever? What we're into with Breaking Bad?" And it's funny because I had just sent an email to someone earlier in the day. To that effect, like, hey, I think this might be the best season of a TV show ever, what we're experiencing right now with Breaking Bad. So if you're saving, for whatever reason, if you're saving this season of Breaking Bad to binge watch it later, just stop listening now. But also I'll say, if you're saving this season of Breaking Bad to binge watch later and are actually denying yourself the pleasure of this season, then there's something wrong with you.
So, yeah, stop that immediately and start watching.
Yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I don't even know if I want you as a listener or reader if you're doing that. It just doesn't even make sense. It doesn't compute. So, Jay, why do you think why is this at least have the potential to be the best season of any TV drama? Let's go drama. We'll keep the sitcoms out.
Yeah.
Of any drama ever.
I think that this season they've managed to create a level of stakes and expectation and excitement in each episode that, you know, just sort of beyond anything I've ever experienced. Like, when it comes to Sunday evening, I just can't wait for this to come on. You know, I just like wait for the DVR to get 15 minutes ahead so I can, you know, fast forward through the commercials. But I really can't wait for it. It's just so exciting. The way that the writers have been able to just, I think at every turn they've subverted, you know there are all these high stakes and you know things are coming to a conclusion, but it's doing it in ways that you could have never expected, in ways that are far more exciting than you could have ever thought about yourself. You know, they've just, I think it's been really just some brilliant, brilliant plotting.
Yeah, I agree. And when we consider this on the levels of greatest shows, drama shows, let's say ever, seasons ever, and we'll just isolate the season for now. We'll talk maybe more historically about the show later. Are you going to include the first 8 episodes of what is still, I guess, technically viewed as the 5th season? Or it's not like they split this up into a season 5 and 6, but they're calling this all one season. Would you include those 8 episodes as well?
I think that's a perfectly reasonable way of going about it, you know, that they started with they started the season with Walt in New Hampshire buying the gun, so that sort of ties the season together. And I also think that starting with, you know, the first half of the season, for me, and I think for you too, Chops, the show sort of reached a new level.
Yeah.
You know, I always enjoyed it, and I enjoyed it as a, you know, as a diversion, as a, you know, as a very interesting show to watch. It was always visually interesting, but I feel like over the last 11 episodes it's really become something else, something
yeah.
like that puts it, you know, in the category of, dare I say, a great work of art. You know, it's just it's an amazing, amazing thing to take in. I'm just amazed by it. I never had them.
Yeah, same way. You know, okay, so I guess 2 points. One is, in viewing this in the previous 8 episodes as part of the season, they actually, I think the first scene of the 5th season was in that Denny's. So that thought process, Vince Gilligan knew exactly what he was going to do, you know, over the course of the entire season, even if they took a year off and split it into two. So I guess you do have to view it as a whole season. And yeah, I think the first 8 episodes of the 5th season were the strongest that they had had as a show, and it's pretty remarkable for a show to hit all their strides on season 5, and particularly the last season. It's usually like season 2 or 3 where you peak, and then it's still good, but it's never the last season in a season 5 where you're just peaking and hitting on all cylinders like this.
So I think there's something really interesting that's happened here, and this is like sort of just interpreting like why I feel it's become such a deeper, more, you know, really important show to watch, if you will. In that, like, the first 4 seasons, you know, like Vince Gilligan talked about it, it's about turning this milquetoast science teacher into, you know, evil incarnate, you know, and that, in watching that progression. And that, you know, definitely happened. It was very entertaining. All the stuff along the way with Gus Fring and Gail Dedeker and all that stuff was really great to watch. But what happened in season 5 is we start seeing the ramifications of it.
Right.
And it's not just, and you see that it's not just Walt's story. I think it's more, it becomes more about like the, you know, what the explosion of what Walt has done and its effects on mainly Jesse, what's the D? Hank. and Skyler.
Right.
It's really, and I think it really becomes more about them. And then you get to see like these incredible scenes with these unbelievable actors who have got like this material to dig into that's 5 years in the making. You know, it's just like, it must be an incredible thing for them to do, because I think some of those scenes have been like the most compelling things I've ever seen.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But on cable television, for sure. And what it feels like is you're almost getting a full, complete thought movie start to finish every week at this point, and a really good one, like an Oscar-worthy one, which, again, makes it so exciting every time it comes on. To the point that you were talking about where, like, you had enjoyed the show. And so you'd watched it. Have you been watching, like, from episode 1, season 1?
Yep.
Okay, so... I did not. So everyone I know, including you, Jeff Holsey, old podcast guest of ours, Brian Balzba, everyone said you got to watch this show. How are you not watching the show? What's wrong with you? Why aren't you watching the show? And I don't know. I just didn't. You know, didn't squeeze in the time. Didn't have the time for it. So I didn't actually watch the show until about 2 months ago. And
really?
Yeah. So I am. I absolutely binge watched it. The pilot drew me in. I thought it was a fantastic pilot. And then I think it was the fourth episode. I guess the second episode too, where they put the guy in the tub.
Yeah.
And you know, the tub falls through in Pinkman's house. And then the third episode, I think it's when Walt strangles the guy in Jesse's basement.
Right.
And at that point, I'm just absolutely hooked. I'm like, holy crap, this is really coming out strong for a season 1. And I ended up watching the rest of it, and I probably only had like 3 weeks off from when I saw the final episode of the first half of season 5 until the start of this. So consumed it all, despite seeing in such a short period of time, found the arc of Walt going bad over the course of a year totally believable. There were not like some shows that I have that were good but require gigantic leaps in logic, like Homeland.
Yeah.
I did not feel that at all. Like, it, nothing felt too terribly unbelievable to me. Within the realm of the world that they're living in.
Like, right. It's clearly a fiction, right? There's nothing about this that isn't it does require, you know, you to suspend your disbelief and to just like buy into this world of Albuquerque.
Right.
But within that, it is very, I mean, I think the only thing to me that was like inconsistent was like, oh, come on, was the plane crash.
Yeah.
That struck me as just a little fanciful.
Yeah, a little, and you know, definitely it almost had like a, have you ever watched Magnolia movie?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of had a Magnolia, just worlds randomly colliding vibe
right.
to it. But the good news for me was Magnolia is probably one of my top 10 favorite movies of all time, so I was okay with that. But everything felt, again, believable within the realm. But my I don't want to say problem with the show, but what was keeping it from the status that it is for me now was that, like, anytime they introduced a plot line, I felt like I knew exactly where it was going, and in about amount the right amount of time that it was going to take to get there. Like, I was never actually really like overly shocked where anything went or led. It was pretty much by the numbers the way I thought it would, but I was okay with it because it was so well written and shot and acted, and everything just came together so well that it still felt somewhat rewarding, and I was okay with it. And obviously, I watched the show and all the episodes in about a month, 6 weeks, so I had no problem with it. But there was never any shocks or surprise. This whole, pretty much season five, and definitely these first three episodes to close out the series, it's all, like, surprising.
It's all, yeah, I mean, the videotape that he made in this past episode, The Confession, and then watching Hank and Marie watching that confession. I mean, it's one of these things where it's like, I think when you're writing something like this, you know, we've both done some writing along the way, it's like you really do have to fight against cliche, you know, that it's like the easiest thing to do is something that you've seen before.
Right.
And I think there was there is like sort of an ingrained template to something like this. You know, you've got the Walt and his brother-in-law, and they're going to come to Loggerheads, and then, you know, this big confrontation that will play itself out, and then there'll be a couple of, you know, an episode or two episodes of, you know, sort of denouement of things coming together. Whereas this, they just totally did it. They just totally subverted that. They, you know, their big confrontation is in episode one, and then they continue to have to deal with each other in these scenes that are just absolutely, I mean, that scene in the Gardunias was like, I've never seen anything like that, I'm pretty sure.
How well acted and pitch perfect, you're talking in the Mexican restaurant, right?
Yes,
that whole entire scene from the absolute fuck you intensity that Hank had, to the way that Walt conducted himself, to the comic relief of the waiter with the flare popping in all the time. You know, there's barely been a better shot, scripted, acted scene I can think of any show I've seen. That was just perfect.
Yeah, and I think that's like the things that have come through, the way that they've come out have been so shocking and interesting that, I mean, I think as much as you've got these like blockbuster crazy, you know, crazy scenes, you know, these big confrontations and, you know, what's upcoming with the skinhead meth, you know, meth cooks, you know, what's been the most chilling and jarring scenes have been, I think, Marie and Skyler.
Yep.
You know, it's really tough to watch.
Yeah. Unbelievable. I mean, they pulled that off and
Skyler didn't say anything.
Yeah.
She didn't have a line of dialogue. Fantastic. Really, just great stuff.
So let's diverge into Skyler a little bit first, because she's pretty much been universally hated, not necessarily as an actor, not like, let's say, Robert Eiler, A.J. Soprano, who is just a bad actor. Really short, by the way. I saw him a couple times at the World Series, way shorter than you would think. This year, he was still playing. But, like, AJ, like, you didn't like him as a character, but he was also, you recognize the fact that he might not have been the best actor either. Skyler, universally hated as a character, but I still think, like, a pretty fantastic actress and actor. It seems like the sympathy or, I don't know, public opinion on her is coming around a little bit this season. Would you agree?
Yeah, you know, I know what you're talking about, and I never agreed with it, and I certainly don't agree with it this season.
Yeah.
That interpretation of her is just like this, you know, shrewy, this very harpy wife or something. I don't buy it, because I think it's a more complex, I think her arc has actually been maybe the toughest of them.
Yeah.
You know, because it's one of these things where it's like, okay, so Walt is turning, you know, is exposing himself to be just, you know, evil incarnate.
Right.
And she's been in this place where she's had choices to make. And it's these increments, you know, and that's really, like, it's a more subtle change in her, you know, her breaking bad, her becoming, you know, this accomplice, when there are, you know, many places along the way where she didn't need to be. So, and I think it was all believable and it all felt very authentic to me.
Yep.
So I thought, you know, whatever issues people have with her, I don't share them.
Did you read her? She wrote an op-ed, and I think it was The Times this weekend.
No, I missed that.
Yeah, she actually wrote an op-ed about her and the separation between her and her character and some of the over-the-top fan stuff that she's had to deal with, but also just in general examining, like, it's partly to your point where, yeah, you hear you have Walt, who is by all stretches of the imagination maybe one of the most evil people, you know, in this fictional world, but like that you could draw up, you know, murdered many people and done some horrible things. And, you know, what's the worst that Skyler's done, yet people find themselves rooting for Walt and despising Skyler? And, you know, what does that say about society? What does that say about men? It was a pretty interesting take.
I'll give that a read.
An unbelievably meta and self-aware of her to write something like that. You usually don't see an actor doing something like that.
Yeah, I don't think you can underestimate for this. You know, like, Vince Gilligan did a lot right in this, and I think Anna Gunn and Aaron Paul...
Yep.
Maybe two of the best, you know, two of the things, you know, Aaron Paul gets his due, but I think, you know, that core cast of, what is it, six, is really just remarkable.
You know, Aaron Paul hit us up for a sponsorship deal to the World Series a couple years ago.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. He wanted to get sponsored. I think it was post-Black Friday, though, so not a lot of deals for even an Aaron Paul to be had.
But, well, he still got his Emmys. So.
Yeah, he still got that. So we'll briefly tie in a little bit of poker on this. In something that we talked about before we started recording, it seems to me that more poker people like this show than other segments of, let's say, My Friends. And maybe it's just because this is more of a social circle that I hang out with. Or because, you know, it's mostly on Twitter, the people I'm going to be following are more poker people than, you know, other walks of life people. But it definitely seems like this poker subculture has embraced Breaking Bad more than other groups of friends that I have that are not part of this industry. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, a little bit. There are definitely subcultures who embrace this show in a very big way. I mean, it's not a big popular success ratings-wise. For the reason why it's popular among poker players, maybe it's because, you know, any of us who've played poker extensively have broken Bad a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Just a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, no, I guess that makes sense. Yeah, we can, maybe we have a more liberal view on morals. And maybe that's why it's not as, I don't know. I don't know if you're just, you know, Midwestern Joe Average guy, if you were to watch the show, what your take on it would be, if it's too fucked up for you or not. But then you look at a show like Walking Dead that does literally like 8 times the ratings as Breaking Bad. And, it's not like it's any less grotesque or challenging to watch for different reasons, but it's got significantly broader audience.
Yeah, I mean, there's an intimacy to the violence here. The themes are just so dark in this that I just don't think it's, you know, it's just not something for everyone. I mean, like, you know, not everybody wants to see somebody descend into evil and take an entire family and city with him. You know, it's, you know, whereas, you know, you can sit down for an hour a night and watch people, you know, crossbowing zombies in the head. There's no real, you don't have any, you know, emotional investment in the zombies, you know, right. That's not really very dark. It's just entertainment.
Right. So So we've been talking about whether or not this is the best season of, and again, we'll just stick with dramas, but the best season of a TV drama ever. What other shows do you think measure up? Like a top five list. What do you think?
Yeah, so I'm leaving this,
and I know the season hasn't ended yet, and we can't really rank this until the season has ended. But yeah, we can probably slip it in where we think it might end. But what do you have? What do you think?
Okay, so I have. So assuming that it doesn't screw things, so here I made a list of my top five, mm-hmm. and I definitely think this could, you know, if it keeps on this trajectory, this would end up in this top five for sure. So. My top five are Battlestar Galactica season 1.
Okay.
Which was amazing.
Oh, always heard great things, never seen it, but I've heard.
Yeah, season 1's worthwhile if you can, don't, you know, season 1, then skip to like the last 10 episodes and you're good.
Okay.
Deadwood season 1.
Okay.
Just amazing writing. Mad Men season 3.
Mm-hmm.
The Sopranos season one. There are probably other episodes, seasons of The Sopranos, but that one had Nancy Marchand, so as Tony's mom. So yep. I had to go with that. And for me, the number one would be The Wire season three.
Okay, so a little bit of commentary on your list. The Wire is the other show that everybody has always said, "How have you not watched this show?" And just started getting into it in the first season. I think I'm at episode 8 or 9, and I almost gave up on it after like the 3rd or 4th episode.
Right, and then you're like, "Oh my god, I have to keep watching this." Right?
Yeah, well, some of the characters that I was, and you know, some of it I've heard a lot about. I mean, I've heard all about the Avon, Stringer, Omar. You know, I've heard all this stuff. So, you know, when they introduced Omar, I found as a really interesting character and finally started giving him a little bit of attention. And they started, I guess, progressing the case on this first season a little bit more. So now I'm definitely more hooked. I'm not quite at the, like, oh, gosh, I cannot wait till my daughter falls asleep so I can just tear through 4 episodes like I was with Breaking Bad. But yeah, the momentum's building in the right direction, I guess. So, and yeah, I've always heard, I don't know if it was season 3 or whatever other seasons of The Wire, but I've always heard people identify seasons of The Wire as their top all time. So,
yeah, I mean, for me, season 3 and season 1 of The Wire, but I definitely think, that's, great, great television. Yep. So what's your thought on?
Well, yeah, interesting thing. You had brought up The Sopranos, too, on your list. And, you know, it almost feels like since everybody, like there's probably at this point almost a universally recognized top 3 or 4 dramas of all time. And everybody would put The Sopranos probably 1 or 2 in it. With The Wire, either 1 or 2, or Mad Men, or Breaking Bad, somewhere in there. But, like, I don't think anybody's got Sopranos less than 2.
Right.
It's like Beatles' Revolver. It's always going to be number 1 or 2 on everybody's best all-time albums list. Because, like, you just feel like you got to. But to me, The Sopranos, like, when looking at it season by season, it's almost like the Rolling Stones, where if you take out Exile from Main Street, which is like a complete album, brilliant masterpiece, everything else with the Rolling Stones where they put out these albums that had like a few just fantastic, unbelievable standout songs, but weren't maybe quite like a Beatles album that was just start to finish fantastic. So I was having a really hard time identifying a Soprano season, but felt like I had to put one on. So I went through last night and just went through all the seasons and went through the episodes in those seasons and like, okay, which one of these do I remember the most of and just remember hitting me the most? And it was season 3, the one with the pines.
That's incredible. And by the way, I think that that analogy there is really, really good because I think that's like, you feel that about The Sopranos, that it was, when it was great, and there were episodes that were amazing.
Right.
But there was a lot of times in there, it was just like, oh boy, this is maybe gone on too long.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was a lot of that. And I thought it ended strong, and I thought the series finale, the fact that people still talk about it and analyze it the way they do, I don't think you could argue any other way than the series finale. It was pretty strong and brilliant. And, the final half of their final season.
Can I just make one comparison between Sopranos and Breaking Bad
now?
And so I think what series have gotten good at, the Wire, The Sopranos, Game of Thrones, is subverting your expectations by killing characters.
Yeah.
They've just like, you get attached to people and then they're gone. I mean, I'm not going to tell you who leaves in The Wire, but like, it's heartbreaking.
Okay.
Game of Thrones, they killed off like half the cast this year.
Yeah. That's
amazing. But Breaking Bad is managing to screw you up so badly and keep you on your feet while keeping the same 6 characters in.
Yeah.
It's a different level, It's amazing.
Absolutely. No, it's a good point because how many times I actually did not know too much about who got offed or who didn't. Apparently it's because nobody did in Breaking Bad. But when I was binge watching, I expected multiple different times that Jesse was going to be killed off, assumed. And I had heard some of the stuff with Gus, so that wasn't too terribly shocking. But they've done an unbelievable job on keeping, outside of who, Gus and Gale, Like, what other, and I guess the
Mike.
Yeah, Mike. Okay, yeah, and Mike too. So I guess they've killed off some, and Mike was a great character. Love the Mike character.
Right.
But yeah, the fact that Pinkman has made it this far is pretty amazing. So
yeah. Okay, so sorry, back to your...
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, top five. And this is not... I couldn't put it in any order. I just couldn't. And part of the reason is because I want to see where this season of Breaking Bad ends up. But so Sopranos season three is in there. This season of Breaking Bad, when counting the first eight episodes of the half of the season, absolutely in there. I actually thought the season finale to the first half of season five of Breaking Bad was the best episode they had up until probably this past week. And it was not only was it great, but it was also a major tribute to Godfather Part Two. Never seen anybody write about it, but I thought it was a major tip of the cap to Godfather Part Two, where you have it, the same lighting, you had Walt looking out the window, just like Michael Corleone was looking out the window before they shot Fredo, and just the settling of scores all over the place. I thought it was just an amazing episode. The montage, the Crystal Blue Persuasion, all that. Brilliant. So I'm putting this as far as we are into this season of Breaking Bad in there. The old, like, top of the list for me was 6 Feet Under Season 2. Unbelievably well-written drama. Everything's still believable. Characters hadn't grated on me yet. Just perfectly written season start to finish. Second season is 6 Feet Under. Picking a Mad Men season was really tough. Really tough. But went with season four. Could have just as easily gone with five. Could have just as easily gone with three. But went with four. Yeah. They just had a couple of the most standout strong episodes, I felt. The suitcase. There was just a lot.
I just had to go with the scene where Don and Don has to come clean.
Yeah. That was fantastic. Yeah, the penultimate episode.
That's why I went with three.
Yeah, and not just that. Season three, actually, their season finale to three, I thought was the most exciting. Just when they, decided to shut doors off and start their own. I thought that was a great finale too. So, I can make a case for 3, 4, or 5, but I'm gonna go with 4. Also because I actually started watching the show on season 4, so it was the first season I had seen. So like some people might hold the first season of Mad Men or whatever of their favorite TV shows is their favorite, because that was their first experience with it. Season 4 is actually my first experience, and then when it was over, I went and back watched 1, 2, and 3, and then all these little threads of story that I knew were big but didn't know why all started obviously making sense. And so anyway, going with 4. And then so how many have I named now, because I might be naming 5 or 6. Mine might be more than 5. So then my off-the-grid choice, but I have maintained it to be one of the most thoroughly entertaining and dramatic things I've ever seen on TV. And because reality shows are at least somewhat scripted, I'm going to go ahead and make the exception and put it in here. Temptation Island Season 2.
Okay.
Have you ever seen that?
I am not familiar with that.
Okay, so it was Fox, when Fox was really trying to get in on the reality craze, and they had the Who Wants to Marry a Millionaire and Joe Millionaire and all these just awful shows. One of their awful shows was Temptation Island. They put four couples that have been together for a long time or engaged but might have had trouble. They put them on an island, split them off, and then they just threw gorgeous-looking people at them all day long, hoping that they would break. And drama would ensue. And on the second season...
So were these, like, prostitutes, like, that they were throwing at them?
Basically, yeah. I mean, it was definitely fame whores that they were throwing at them. So, but it was all, like, models and, like, it was just ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous. And, a lot of, pretty much every relationship ended up, going into the tank, of course. I think a couple came out okay. But particularly season two of Temptation Island was just phenomenally well casted, and all the drama, everything you could have possibly hoped for to happen, happened. So some of the most compelling TV I've ever seen. So I'm throwing that in there. Freaks and Geeks. I know it's more of like a dramedy than just a straight drama, but I wouldn't definitely classify it as a comedy. But that was, was not a show that I watched when it came out. I got it on DVD. And it was probably the most bummed I've ever been on a oh my gosh, the show ended. I think when I got the DVDs, it was 5 or 6 years after the show ended. And I was legitimately really upset that I would never get to watch another episode or you know, spend any more time with these characters. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that there are, but, you know, it's different, like sort of post, you know, post The Sopranos,
yes.
It's just so it really becomes comparing apples to, you know, to oranges for hour long dramas.
Yeah.
You know, because I think you could. There's a lot to be said for. I don't know. I think there were seasons of Buffy that were fantastic.
Yeah, like the second season of Buffy, I think, was supposed to be.
Yeah, just amazing. Just amazing. You know, incredibly well written. You know, and well put together. Particularly if you like sort of sci-fi fantasy stuff. But it's like, how do you, you know, how do you compare that to The Wire or
right.
Deadwood? I mean, it just doesn't. There's really no way to do that. It's just unfair to both, you know?
Yeah, what? Okay, so I never watched Buffy, but I did hear, you know, similarly great things. And maybe ER maybe falls into this, but...
And NYPD Blue or something
right,
like that.
But, like, yeah. It just... Like, you can't go back and watch any of those shows. It really feels like it all started with The Sopranos. Like, Sopranos was Nirvana Nevermind, and before... That, you know, if you listen to stuff before that musically in the 90s or 80s, it just, yeah. It's like the world changed at that point. Everything started sounding different and better.
I mean, not to get too geeky, but just like the economics of it really changed. You know,
right. That, well, because you're doing, you know, the networks are doing 23 shows and the, you know, the cable stations are doing 8 to 13. So, you know,
right.
you could actually, there wasn't as many dead episodes, you know, like filler episodes. Every episode had to matter because there weren't too many of them.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, it almost feels like you can't include anything pre-Sopranos because it's just different.
And it's a different world, and the stakes are so much higher. Like,
yeah.
For, you know, that keeping people engaged, like the thing about, like, episodic television where they're doing 23 a year is they have to sort of be independent stories. They have to be created so a user can, you know, a watcher can come into it in episode 5 and, you know, have a full sense of, you know, the entirety of the plot. You know, so it's just, it becomes a very different world when you're helping people subscribe to your service, you know, like
yeah.
HBO or Netflix or something.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we, you know, part of, at least on the entertainment side where we bonded early on was, you know, we love Mad Men. Love
right.
us Mad Men. Where do you think Breaking Bad and Mad Men stack up against each other? Because it feels like until this season, most everybody recognized Mad Men as probably the better show. But it feels like that's changing now.
Yeah, I think that, so I think this becomes like this very nebulous thing about like a show becoming like going from something that's just entertainment to something that's maybe has got deeper, you know, larger things to say, you know, deeper commentary on, you know, the world.
Yep.
And I think, you know, Breaking Bad has gotten there. You know, I don't know. I mean, like, certainly seeing the descent, Walter's descent into evil was interesting, always compelling. But now it seems to have, there seems to be exploring, you know, the characters and the other characters in a much deeper way. And I think Mad Men, which, you know, started so unbelievably strong, and it's had, you know, some of the highest moments I can recall. I mean, I really disliked the last season. I didn't like the last season at all.
Okay.
So I think that they're, you know, like, it's going to take a little time to sort it out once they're both done, you know, like,
sure.
Which, what the full impact of them is. You know, I think I think, you know, the first couple of seasons of Mad Men probably had a little more, you know, to push, a little more that's going to be applicable to people who are doing this later, than Breaking Bad. So maybe a little more influential, but, yeah, I it's hard to rank these things, right? I don't...
Yeah, I know. It's tough. It's like, to go all sports, and you'll appreciate this in Boston maybe, but to me, Mad Men, I agree that this last season was probably the weakest. I enjoyed it more than most people, though. I thought there were some unbelievably strong episodes and rewarding moments in it. But Mad Men would be like Tom Brady.
Okay.
Came out the gate really strong and is maybe coasting a little bit on the success of being a winner. but like having some definite flaws over the last few years. And Breaking Bad's like John Elway's career. Like,
right.
He always saw the potential there, and then the last two seasons, holy shit, what just happened? And now, like, the greatest ever, or one, you know, considered one of the greatest ever. That's
right, and that's how you remember you. How people remember you is how you go out.
So. Yeah, it's definitely how you go out. Yeah, the one thing that I'll say about this, up until this fifth season of Breaking Bad, yeah, I always found it entertaining, just like we've talked about. Mad Men, to me, though, like, Breaking Bad was always exhilarating. It was great entertainment, where Mad Men was infinitely more rewarding. And, you know, you felt great when they would call back little bits that, you know, almost seem like throwaways in a season two or a season three, but then become hugely important in season four or season five, and how well thought out it was. And it was just a more rewarding show, and, you know, maybe not the rush of adrenaline like a Breaking Bad, but like something that I would watch, and then I would immediately rewatch it again, you know, because I'd get the HD yeah. East Coast feed, and then I'd watch it again, and, you know, have no problem watching it back to back, the exact same episode. Now, I don't know, the season of Breaking Bad is changing the paradigm. The only thing that I can still say that Mad Men's 100% got over Breaking Bad is where, like, Mad Men, I'll actually reflect on my life sometimes on the storylines.
Right.
Where I've never had, like, a moment of introspection off of Breaking Bad. Like, you know, I'm going to, like...
Oh, which is ironic because of all the meth cooking you do.
You're right, exactly. Okay. You know, I've got this just burgeoning meth lab in my basement. And, you know, I've loved meth for 20 years.
Yeah. And why you meth have Piper?
Yeah, when everybody was doing acid, dropping acid, I was doing meth. So... Yeah, right. I was meth before meth was cool. No, but it's, you know, there's no introspection whatsoever for me on Breaking Bad, and I don't know if that matters or not on, you know, whether or not it's one of the greatest shows of all time. But I definitely get that with Mad Men. It always makes me reflect. How about you?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think there, you know, you could hit on a lot of levels for something like this, right? I mean, I think The Wire doesn't cause me to reflect personally on, but it's about, you know, choices that I'm making in my own life and the way that Mad Men might. But, you know, it forces, you know, socio-political, you know, issues into your lap in this very immediate way. You know, so that's, you know, I wouldn't call that less, that's certainly not less value than, you know, something that, you know, is more personally reflective. Yeah, and I don't know where Breaking Bad is going to end up here. I mean, it's definitely been much, much more interesting, you know, particularly over the last 3 weeks. And I mean, I just can't wait to see. I mean, I can't think of even a novel that comes to mind where I've just been so eagerly awaiting.
Yeah.
And we even know how it ends. We know what's going to happen, and, you know, we even know what's going to be happening in the last couple of episodes, more or less.
Right.
He's got the gun, the house has been gutted, you know, but the journey from here to there, even though it's such a short distance, is really among the most exciting things.
Yeah. There's still a ton of questions to be answered there. And that's, lead to one of the last points that we want to talk about, which was predictions for the rest of the season for Breaking Bad. Now, tying up actually the Mad Men versus Breaking Bad, one of the other things that always stood out to me, more on Mad Men than to once I got into Breaking Bad, was that Mad Men always zigged when I thought it was going to zag and zagged when I thought it was going to zig. I always felt like it was going to do something somewhat unpredictable, or the characters weren't going to do exactly what I thought they would. And I didn't know where the plot lines would go, where I really did with Breaking Bad up until this season. Now this season, they've even more or less told us from the first scene of season five that, you know, Walt's got hair, he's alive, and he's, you know, under a different identity. So, you know, we've got some pretty big points. And then, as you brought up, you know, we've seen the house, the Heisenberg on the wall. So, I mean, we know stuff goes about as bad. And then his neighbor sees him, and the neighbor either thought he was dead. Who knows? All of that. So... having said that, for the first time with Breaking Bad, I have absolutely no freaking idea where it's going to go. None. No clue.
Marvelous, isn't it? Isn't that an incredible feeling?
Yeah, and even with given so much information. But that still doesn't mean we can't make predictions. So give me a couple of predictions.
Okay, my first prediction would be, and I think this is going to be, you know, against the mainstream here, that all the major characters, save for maybe Walt, make it out alive.
Okay.
That Jesse will be alive, and Skyler and Hank will be alive.
Okay.
Yeah, other than that, I've got, like, nothing.
All right. Yeah, I'm gonna just pull some stuff out. What I think will, and I'm probably gonna be completely wrong, but one interesting thing that happened in this last week's episode was with Todd at the beginning, and it felt very.
Can I just say, wasn't that like the world's greatest callback to? What's the movie? Tarantino's first Reservoir Dogs. Yeah. Wasn't that
awesome? Both Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction-y.
Pulp Fiction, right.
It felt very much like both of those, which the show does a great job of. It felt like, you know, that season, the midway season finale to 5 felt very Godfather-ish to me. So they always seem to do a good tip of the cap there. But yeah. With Todd, you know, he's telling this story, I think they were in the bathroom maybe, or at the table, but that was very much, it was talking about the train heist.
Right.
And it was very much building up that mythology of Heisenberg. And when you think, you know, that his house was, you know, it's all off, but, you know, people had spray painted Heisenberg on the wall. Right. There's clearly going to be some mythological building of Walter White.
Yes.
Which means that his story must blow up on some sort of a national level.
Right.
And but it, I, the way that his house, you know, having that spray painting of Heisenberg in his house, I don't think it blows up in the way that he submitted his tape saying that this was all Hank's fault and Hank's the mastermind of it all, because then that doesn't glorify Heisenberg. It would actually glorify Hank.
Right.
Are you following me?
Yeah, I am.
So I think whatever happens, it is not Walter dropping that tape and making Hank look like the bad guy or the mastermind.
Okay, so your prediction would be that Hank does not end up under suspicion for being...
I do not think Hank ends up under suspicion at all. I think the other thing, too, is calling back to, I think it was either season 1 or 2, but with Walter's old partner in Grey Matter, it would be season 1.
Right.
But, you know, there's been this underline from season 1, like burning resentment that Walt has had for not being recognized as the genius that he probably is, but that he thinks he is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, even going back to the first half of last season, you know, with the say my name and he makes the guy say Heisenberg. I think he wants that recognition.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when the last time I made the Power 20, I kind of wanted the recognition that year, so I put myself out there a little bit more. It's the same thing. So maybe I can relate to Walt on a deeper level. But it's the exact same thing. No, but I feel like he wanted the recognition, and still does. Like, he feels like he's never gotten the due for being the brilliant chemist that he is.
And creating, at this point, being the mastermind of, you know, of this entire...
Yeah.
Industry, yeah.
So whatever, you know, maybe he helps create some of this, you know, mythology that I think actually does happen and makes him this figure. Having said that, too, I'm going to work under the assumption that everybody assumes that he's dead, just judging off his neighbor's reaction.
I think that's right. And I actually, okay, so this makes me think that there's probably Walt is dragged back kicking and screaming into cooking.
Okay.
Would probably, you know, I think that would be a reasonable prediction that that Todd isn't doing, you know, isn't producing.
Right. And I think they had already, they in the previous episode said that Todd's purity was at like 74%. So yeah,
right.
It was nowhere near Pinkman's level when Pinkman took over on his own. One other prediction, I hate throwing this one out there, but it just happened to be a throwaway that I read in an article written, I think it was in Rolling Stone, that Aaron Paul did, that Jesse Pinkman did.
Yep.
And he specifically mentioned and referenced a scene that he had with Walt in episode 6. So I know for a fact that 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 Jesse.
He's not dead. He's got a couple more episodes.
That he's at least making it to episode 6, if not all the way to the end. So I know that. That's my prediction, is that Pinkman makes it to episode 6. And if he gets killed in this next episode, bravo to Aaron Paul for throwing everybody out. But yeah, I read that on a flight, I think, back from Chicago last week or 2 weeks ago. In Rolling Stone. So there's that. And then, yeah, after that, I just don't know. I don't know. But yeah, whatever it is, it doesn't end well.
I'm going to put more energy into our fantasy football draft than trying to figure out where this is going.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's tomorrow, isn't it?
Right.
Okay. So yeah, that's where I'm at. Not a lot of answers there, but at least I kind of sort of feel like I might have a direction on it. But this is one of the few times where I actually had almost I like nothing more in the world than being right. it's like my favorite thing in the world, being right and spite, I love those two things.
Mine is the laughter of small children.
So. Right. Yeah. So yes, exactly. So anyway, so this is one of the few instances though where I don't care if I'm right or not, because the ride's just so fun, so yeah. Enjoyable. So that's it. That's our Breaking Bad, our pure Breaking Bad podcast. I can't believe we haven't done other TV analysis before, but this was good.
Well, maybe we could do the first couple of episodes of Community now that Dan Harmon's back.
Yeah. Who, by the way, you know that that Mike's on the show now.
I guess. That's awesome.
Yeah, and they had Gus on last season, I think.
Just terrific.
Yeah, so clearly Dan Harmon is a Community fan, so that's good. And Community, by the way, not to go off on Community, but Community, I thought, really did start at least finding its legs a little bit towards the end of the last season. It started off, and I even skipped probably a whole month's worth of episodes, but it picked up. Like it found some voice by the end.
Okay, I didn't keep up with it. I was so you know how much I love that show, yeah. And I was just so disappointed in the first couple of episodes. I just decided not to watch it.
Yeah, totally understandable. Yeah. And I, again, did the same thing, but then it was still being DVR'd. And then, a Saturday or Sunday morning, I'd start watching. I'm like, oh, okay, now I kind of recognize these characters again. I kind of get them. It was like hitting on 75 or 80%. So instead of like 25%, which is where it was at first. So,
right.
it got closer there. But anyway, Jay, do you got anything you want to plug? Anything that you're doing? Anything you want to talk about?
Well, maybe we'll plug. There's some pretty exciting stuff in the works. I'm working for a company called Skill in the Games that does analytics.
Skill in the Game?
Sorry?
Skill in the Game?
Skill in Games.
Skill in Games. Got it.
Yeah. We've got some pretty exciting stuff coming up that I am not at liberty to divulge just yet, but maybe I'll tell you about it in a little while.
Okay. Maybe at the we'll do another podcast at the end of the season. And then maybe you'll have some more to talk about with it then. So Jay, thanks. Good stuff. And let's plan on doing this again at the end of the Breaking Bad season.
Thanks very much, Chops. Enjoy it.